As we said in the past, passes can be also used to establish the position of a moving object, the amount of its displacement, and also the velocity with which the movement takes place. Passes correspond to incremental movements. I mean that every time a pulse is acquired, is achieved, a displacement of the object has been carried out. The amount of this displacement depends on the granularity of the transducer that we are using to measure the movement. And depending on the fact that the movement is bidirectional or not, the variable that will be incremented or decremented correspondingly to the acquisition of the pulses will be considered as a signed number or an unsigned number. Unsigned in case of one direction movements, signed in case of bidirectional movements. To make the situation clear, we can refer to the incremental encoder, a transducer that we well know, since in the course of mechatronics we described it and studied it quite widely. And we know that the encoder is used to move, to establish the amount of rotational movements, in particular the incremental encoder, since it provides the possibility of measuring the rotation, the direction, and eventually the velocity of the rotating object. Remember that by means of a screw, a rotation movement can be transformed into a linear one, so several situations can be, industrial processes can be well managed by the employment of such a kind of transducer. The incremental encoder is made up by a wheel mounted onto a shaft. The shaft is connected to the object that is rotating. And as you can see from the figure in slide 39, the wheel is made of two crowns, two concentric crowns, each of which feature a set of windows that are alternatively transparent and opaque to the light. Behind the every crown and above the crown itself, a couple of electronic devices, a LED and a phototransistor, is mounted. So as when the crown rotates due to the movement of the object, one of the window, white or black, that is transparent or opaque, will be put in front to the LED. In case of a transparent window is in front of the LED, the light will pass and will activate the phototransistor. Otherwise, a black window will stop the light and the phototransistor will be off. Correspondingly to this, with a suitable electronic circuit, we can say that the light corresponds to acquire a 1, a logic 1, while a black window corresponds to acquire a logic 0. Imagine that the output of the phototransistor is connected to the port of a microprocessor. So that's it's enough to have two pins connected to the two collectors of the phototransistor to be able to read the two pulse train. Shifting to slide 30, we see a strip, let's say, of the two sequence of windows that are provided by a rotation. And first of all, we see immediately a typical characteristic of the encoder transducer, that is, the crowns are not aligned, but are shifted one respect to the other. In particular, the amount of the shift is one third of the period, that is half of the window. So, if we take into account a black window, for example, in the crown B, we will have that this black window is half overlapped with a black window in the strip A, and half is overlapped to a white window in the strip A. And we can say that this rule is valid vice versa, for B with respect to A and for A with respect to B. So the resolution capability of the transducer is related to what angle corresponds to half a window, and in turn it is clear that this corresponds to the number of windows that cover the entire 360 degrees, the entire circular angle. In the lower part of the slide number 40, we see a typical sequence of pulses as they are acquired by the microprocessor due to a rotation. I don't want to go into the details about the direction of the rotation, because in a minute we will explain very well this issue. I only wanted to highlight that another of the possibilities provided by such a kind of transducer is to highlight the inversion of the rotation during the movement. And this is quite clear, because during the rotation, the amplitude of a pulse or of the distance between two pulses tends to be constant. But when the rotation is inverted, one of the channels will feature a shortening in the distance between two pulses, while the other channel, the other strip, will feature a length in the duration of the pulse that is larger than normal. And clearly, these two things, these two situations, can be easily identified by a software code, so it is easy to state the instant into which the rotation has inverted. Moreover, as I said 1 minute ago, it is possible to establish not only the amount of the rotation, but also the direction of the rotation itself. Let's look to the disk that is represented into the slide. We see the two crowns, and we see also the group of black windows together with the white windows alternatively located, in every one of the two crowns. The position into which we analyze the direction of the rotation is represented by that red dotted line. We say that one is the instant t equal to zero, we could say better that this is the instant into which we evaluate the direction of the rotation. So let's imagine that the rotation is clockwise, as in the sense of the yellow arrow. That is, considering this red axis, we are entering into a black area, into a black zone, because the movement is from left to right. So before this instant, we were in the transparent window, so the signal was high. Now it will become zero because we enter into a black window that doesn't allow the light to pass. The channel A corresponding to the external crown well reflects this situation, and we see that in the moment into which we cross the red line, we are passing from light to darkness, that is from 1 to 0. Correspondingly, the B channel is in a situation where a white window, a transparent window, is overlapped to the two windows in the channel A. So in that moment, we are in the half of a white window, a transparent window, that is, we are in the half of a positive pulse. And this is well expressed by the two pulse trains in the upper part of the slide. Of course, if we consider an opposite movement, that is from right to left, so counterclockwise rotation, we will have exactly consideration in the opposite sense. We could say reverse considerations. That is, in that case, we are passing, talking about the external crown, the channel A, we are passing from the darkness to the light, so from 0 to 1, whilst, again, the window of the internal crown, the B channel, is in the middle of a transparent window, that is, in the middle of a positive pulse. So it is clear, even by a first look, but of course considering a piece of software code, that it is very easy to establish the direction of the movement considering the commutations of channel A and channel B, and if A and B become equal or different due to these commutations. The amount of the rotation, as I said before, is established by the number of the windows that each crown features, considering that due to the shift between the external and the internal one, the real measurement, the real resolution correspond to half a window. Going to slide the next slide, we can better identify the situation, because it is easy to say, looking at the two train pulses, that in a clockwise rotation, when we have a commutation on A, that is when the edge on A is positive, if A and B are different, the rotation is clockwise, otherwise the rotation is counterclockwise. And conversely, when the edge is negative on A, in clockwise rotation, A and B remain different. A becomes 0 and B is 1. Instead, in the falling edge of A in a counterclockwise rotation, A and B tend to become equal. both of them will be zero, will be low. Similar considerations can be done considering the edges on the channel B. That is, in clockwise rotation, B, when changes, becomes typically equal to A. This happens both in the raising edge, because B becomes 1 as exactly A is, and in the falling edge of B, that becomes 0 as A. The consideration is opposite in the counterclockwise, because every time B makes a commutation, it becomes different than A. So the table in the right part of the slide number 42 expresses the mutual relationship between commutation of A that are called with the letter P and N to say positive and negative, and the commutation of B, positive and negative, with respect the level that the other channel has. For example, in the first line we see that A changes in the positive sense, becomes positive, I mean, because 1 becomes 1, but different than B, that is a 0. This is clockwise. By convention, the rotation in clockwise sense is associated to the increment of the counting variable. Conversely, when a positive edge is detected on A, and this corresponds to A and B equal, counterclockwise rotation is assumed and the counter is decremented. Similar considerations are repeated for the negative commutation of A and for all the commutations in the B channel. In this way, it is possible to establish the amount of the movement performed, of the rotation performed. But in any case, a protocol that defines the steps for performing such a kind of measurement should respect some specifics and also some constraints. First of all, the variable that will contain the number of the counts depends on the nature of the movement we are detecting. That is, if the movement is bidirectional, we will have an integer counting variable that could assume positive or negative values, while instead, if the movement is natural, is monodirectional, a natural variable will be enough for hosting, for containing the number of the counts. Second, the type, that is the size of the variable, depends on the granularity of the transducer. Commercial encoders can have up to 1,000 windows, so it is clear that considering entire rotations repeated many times, the number of the pulses, so the number of the counts, could be very, very, very big, very large, and the definition of the type of the variable should be done accordingly to the maximum counting we expect to have. About the acquisition and the identification of the direction in the rotation, the software procedure should establish a correct edge detection and an algorithm that is able to compare the levels of the channel A and the channel B, I mean the external and the internal ground. Sometimes this is possible directly using software. Sometimes it could be a good idea, in particular if the rotation velocity is very high, to use a primary counter that is upgraded depending on the rotation and on the combination of the edges and the levels, and successively to read the content of the counter to determine the entity, the amount of the rotation performed, and also the general direction into which the rotation was exerted. We will see a couple of solutions in such a sense. The first completely software, and the second featuring, let's say, mainly an hardware approach, and finally with a final usage of the software to establish the values stored in the counters. The complete software solution is well depicted by the slide 43. Again, we suppose to have two pulse trains coming from the two photomultipliers lighted by the LEDs, and whose collectors are connected to two pins of the microprocessor port. The port could detect the commutations two ways, as usual. We can configure the pins of the port to raise up a request of an interrupt service routine, depending on the edge of the commutation, depend on the direction of the commutation. This is a typical interrupt approach. Otherwise, we can detect the commutation through polling by comparing the levels before and after the expiration of a certain sampling period. For example, in the figure, we have shown a sequence of pulses into which you see that corresponding to the edges on A, we will have a difference in the levels of A with respect to B. So this is a typical clockwise situation. The software that is able to detect this kind of rotation is described in the blue square. It is a pseudo code, but it is very easy to implement in C or in whatever language. If we detect a commutation on B, we test if B is equal to A, like in this case, look at the positive or negative edges of B, count plus plus, because it corresponds to a clockwise rotation. Otherwise, the count variable is decremented. In case of a commutation detected on A, we test the diversity between the levels of A and B to state that the commutation corresponds to a clockwise rotation. Otherwise, if the levels of A and B are equal, the counter will be decremented. And this is a completely software solution that can be well described by slide 44, into which we have in the left part a code fragment performing the acquisition, and in the right part some considerations related to the frequency with which we need to call the acquisition and the detection routine. In slide 44, code written in assembly Intel 8088 is proposed, that performs the software acquisition of the pulse train coming from an incremental encoder, whose rotation can be bidirectional, and managing the identification of the amount of the rotation and the direction into which it happens. This code basically is executed every t instance of time that is corresponds to a polling approach, but the algorithm on which it is based, it would be the same even if the acquisition of the pulses would have been done through interrupt. First of all, this routine acquires from the port connected to the encoder the value of the pulse train that corresponds to two connections, two pin of the port itself, that is written in the accumulator load. So the port is an 8-bit one, but we are interested only to 2 bits of them, and in fact the second instruction is an AND of the accumulator load with 3. This is done under the hypothesis that the two pulse trains are connected to the first and to the second bit of the port, that is the bit B0 and the bit 1. The AND with 3 basically clear all the other bits and concentrates the attention only on the two that will help us to establish the size of the rotation and the correct direction. The accumulator low is saved in the B register, and then the B register is shifted on right one position, that is in the least significant bit of the B register. We have the value of the channel B, the channel that corresponds to the internal crown of the incremental encoder. The instruction exchange AL with precedente basically perform the exchange between the memory location into which the previous acquisition has been stored and the current value of the accumulator. So the successive XOR function performs a comparison between the previous acquired values and the present one, and leaves the result in the accumulator low. But in this way, now in precedente, we have the current values of the two channels A and B recently acquired. AL, after this operation, will contain in the two least significant bits 0 if no commutations at all happened on the channel B and on the channel A, or 1 if in one or both the channels these commutations took place. Of course, as we well know, looking at the shape of the two pulses in A and B, it is clear that commutations cannot happen contemporaneously. So if we have the commutation on A, we don't have a commutation on B, and vice versa. The XOR is one of the typical operations that set the so-called zero flag. In other words, the microprocessor that we are considering is equipped with a set of flags. One is the zero, the so-called zero flag, that are set depending on the result of the executed operation. If the XOR provides as a result zero, that is, no commutations in A and B took place, there is nothing to do, so we only have to exit from the routine waiting for the next sampling phase. So jump ASCII, and ASCII performs the return to the main program calling this routine. Instead, if a commutation has been detected, we start from the hypothesis that it could be a commutation regarding the channel A. So and AL with 1 simply isolate the least significant bit that will be 1 if a commutation on A has been found, or 0 otherwise. This value is saved in the register CL that from now on will be considered as the register with the possible commutation detected. Then we recover from the memory location precedente the acquired value from the port, we put it in the accumulator low, and we end this value with 1, so isolating the value of the channel A, the least significant bit. And now we have to perform some comparisons that reflect the logic of the table we have seen a few slides before. First of all, there is a comparison between AL and BL, that is, we are comparing the value of the channel A and the value of the channel B, just to see if they are equal or different. Then we perform another XOR function, comparing the value of the register A low that now contains the result of the previous comparison with CL, that is the register that contains eventually the commutation on the channel A. If at the end of the couple of XOR the zero flag is set, simply we have to increment the counter. Instead, if the flag is not set, we decrement the counter and we exit from the routine. Here we can say that the core of the algorithm is contained, is expressed. Let's try to understand what does it mean, the two successive XORs and the successive test on the zero flag. To understand, possibly understand better this, a table has been included into the slide, into which we have 6 columns. The first corresponds to the XOR between the channel A and the channel B. The second corresponds to the content of the register CL, that is, to the possible commutation found on the channel A. The third corresponds to the XOR between the register AL and the register CL. And the fourth corresponds to the action that we have to perform, decrement or increment. And the last two columns correspond to two comments that try to explain the situation. First of all, when we made XOR ALBL, we tested basically if A and B are equal or not. Consider that these instructions are executed because a commutation has been found. Remember that we didn't execute jump 0 ASCII. The problem is that if this commutation was on B, on the B channel, I mean, or on A, on the A channel. So when I consider that the first XOR between AL and BL provides a 0 result, and the second XOR between AL and CL provides another 0 result, it means that I am looking at the first two columns, or better, the first row of the first two columns reported into the table that are 0, 0. So the output of the last XOR is 0, and this situation corresponds to the fact that I found a commutation, but this commutation wasn't in in the channel A, since CL is zero. So the commutation was on the channel B, and the new value of A is equal to B. This corresponds, if you look to the pulse train that we have previously seen, but even to the pulse couple that we have in the right part of the slide 44, corresponds to a clockwise rotation, okay? Commutation on B, and B and A are equal. So, as we said in the past, the convention is clockwise incrementing the counter. Second situation, we have the XOR between A and B equal to 1, that is, A and B are different, but again, A new and A old, that is CL, is 0. The result of the final XOR will be 1, that is non-zero, and this is a situation into which a commutation on A was found, but the two channels become different. This is a classic counterclockwise situation, so we have to decrement. Third row of the table, now we have 0 as the result of the comparison between the channel A and the channel B, so A and B are equal, but CL is 1, that is a commutation was on the channel A. The result is 1, and the action we have to perform is minus 1, because if a commutation has been detected on A and the new value of A is equal to B, this is a counterclockwise rotation. Look again that in the right part of the slide 34, the two pulses shown are different from this condition, from this situation. So it is a counterclockwise rotation, and by default we decrement the counter. And finally, we have 1 in the XOR between A and B, so they are different, and 1 in CL, that is the comparison between the new and the old values of A, so commutation on A, different values between A and B, clockwise rotation, increment the counter. The code reflects faithfully this philosophy. In fact, if the XOR, the final XOR between AL and CL provides a result different from zero, the successive instruction jump to the decrement of the counter. And in fact, looking at the table, if the result AL XOR CL is 1, the action is minus 1. Conversely, if the result of the last XOR is 0, the jump non-zero is not executed, and we continue incrementing the counter, and then we exit accordingly again to the reported table. The right part of the slide 44 try to answer to the following question. What is the frequency needed, necessary to be respected to activate such a kind of software routine? In other words, how much time is necessary to wait to be sure to detect both the commutations on A and the commutations on B while making the comparison between the new value of A and the previous value of B, or vice versa, the new value of B and the old value of A. In the figure, we have shown three possible situations. That is, consider three, looking at the three dotted lines. black one corresponds to the last acquired value of A and B, that is in this particular case 0 for both of them, and the green one corresponds to an acquisition, that is a call of the routine, that is able to detect the commutation in the channel A. If instead we sample the status of the line A with a period that corresponds to the red line, the red dotted line, this sampling would have been very poor, very wrong, because clearly it is not able to detect the commutation on A, since it allows that both a commutation from low to high and a commutation from high to low happen. So, looking at this last situation, from the microprocessor point of view, no commutations on the channel A would have been occurred. And this is clearly a mistake, because instead two commutations occurred in this interval. So the mistake is in an interval of time that is greater than the duration of one pulse. The sampling time on the channel A should be less than the duration of this pulse, that is half the period. So, considering the channel A, we need a sampling frequency that is two times the frequency. Remember that the frequency corresponds to the rotation velocity of the encoder. I repeat, two times the frequency of the original signal, that is of the pulse train in the channel A. Or similar considerations can be done if we consider the channel B. So we can say that we need, if we consider every channel by itself, a frequency two times the frequency of the channel. But if we consider both the channels, and we know that this is necessary because only considering both the channels we are able to detect the correct rotation direction, clearly the frequency that we need is twice the one necessary for every single channel. So if for every single channel we need two times the frequency of the rotation of the windows in the channel, for acquiring and executing such a kind of algorithm in the correct way, considering both A and B, we need a frequency that is four times the original one, that is the frequency of the channel A and the channel B. And this is a constraint quite strong. Look moreover that if we would sample with, let's say, the period limited by the red dotted line, the algorithm wouldn't work properly. In fact, in this case, the previous value of the channel B would be considered as zero, while the next, the sampled value of the channel B would be read as one. So we have that a commutation on B happens with A that is equal to zero, so equal to the value of A. And this, on the basis of the algorithm that we have previously explained, would bring us to conclude that the rotation is counterclockwise. But now we are well trained to recognize, even looking at the shape of the pulses, that this is the shape typical of clockwise rotation. Instead, if we use the green dotted line, we clearly recognize the clockwise rotation because we again observe the edge, the commutation, the change on B, but the new value of B is equal to A, so clockwise, accordingly to the algorithm. As I said, to recognize these situations for singularly, both for the channel A and for the channel B, it is not enough to sample with two times the frequency, because look at the figure, we need to recognize the commutation on A separately from the one on B. And this is not possible if we sample with the period limited by the green line. So we need a greater frequency, and this frequency is four times the original frequency of one of the two channels.